This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as we look back at the second half of a season like no other in this most extraordinary of years. If you've been listening and subscribing since we kicked off in September, a big thank you. And as we enjoy the close season and a few weeks of much-needed rest before we go again in August, it felt like a good time for a little retrospective look back on some of the most notable and memorable interviews we've done this calendar year. You've already had a Best of the Guests Part 1, which we gave you at Christmas, so no prizes for guessing what this episode is called. Sit back and relax as we bring you the Best of the Guests Part 2 on this last edition of the season of the official EFL podcast. We kick off our season-end roundup with one of the modern era's all-time greatest goal scorers. Last week, he called time on a career that spanned the best part of two decades. But we caught up with him at the beginning of February as he was about to embark on what was to be his final chapter. He'd just signed for his old manager, Chris Hughton, at Nottingham Forest, and I was keen to find out how Glenn Murray had managed to maintain that now legendary pace after all these years. You're 37. While we were getting set up to record this, I can see you, and you showed a decent turn of pace down the stairs to go and get a pair of headphones. At 37, are you still determined to wring every last vestige out of your bricks and mortar and get those extra games under your belt until you can't actually walk?
Yeah, definitely. I think once you get to sort of, well, let's say 35, 34, 35 and above, I think it means even more to you because you know it's sort of not going to last forever, and you appreciate, well, used to appreciate full stadiums and things like that. And hopefully I'll be able to do that again at some point in the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I was going to ask you all about that, that if your mind accepts that your body is perhaps not doing everything that it used to, or whether you just fight on blind. And I've talked to a lot of sports people who are getting towards the end. And I've seen both sorts, from those that are deeply prepared, Glenn, as I'm sure you have, to those that just don't want to accept it, hit the edge of the cliff and then think, oh my goodness, that's it, that's the end.
Do you know what, Clem? That is one thing I've been really, really lucky with, is my body. I've been quite robust, not many muscle injuries, touch wood. and sort of just been able to train most days, play games, and just ride little injuries and things like that. Obviously, I don't think any footballer at any age ever feels 100% ready to go. You've always got niggles or problems that you learn to manage with age. But like I say, I've been really lucky with my body.
And does the experience that you have manifest in brain power that kind of allows for falls in your physicality? Am I making sense there and all? Can your thought process, because you've been around the game so long and seen most things, kind of provide a little bit of substitution for maybe not quite getting in that gap anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I've never had pace, Clem. Let's be honest about this. Do you know what I mean? I've not lost any. So that was something that used to bother me as a younger man, and I used to look around. I used to be like, Jesus, I wish I had that extra yard and things like that. That has actually come full circle now, and it's working in my favour because I've got none to lose.
Yeah, that, and funnily enough, I found a quote from Chris Hughton when he signed for Forest this week, and he actually said, he's not a player who's generally relied on his pace. Now, I think he intended it as a compliment, and I'm glad you're sort of aligned with him. And I think we're on the same page with what I was trying to say. You've always worked off speed of thought and looked for other ways. Your game hasn't been too adversely affected.
No, not too bad. And I think your speed of thought does get better. You get wiser. You know sort of when to run and when you're sort of doing supposedly needless running. And it's just about hitting those gaps, those areas, and making the right runs and the educated guesses of where that ball's going to fall in the box and things. And I think things like that, just they can't be taught.
What about the mental and emotional process of slowly but surely heading towards the edges? You know, when you've been top dog, when you are still the record goal scorer in one championship season, when you do push towards the fringes, have you had to sort of train yourself and counsel yourself in preparation for that?
Yeah, I have. I think your ego takes a little bit of a bashing, but throughout my whole career, I've tried not to have an ego, and I've tried to remain grounded. Coming from where I came from, sort of where I grew up in West Cumbria, and seeing the other side of life being a plasterer before I made it as a footballer has helped me in that capacity. So yeah, obviously, you go to places. I mean, even at the peak of my powers at Crystal Palace, I had to play second fiddle to people. After scoring 30 goals in the Championship, we stepped up the Premier League. A bad injury, and all of a sudden, I'm sort of surplus to requirements. So yeah, it's just part and parcel of it. Do you know what I mean? And naturally, in any club, in any division, no matter how good you're doing as an individual, the club are always looking to progress and get someone better in. That's the nature of the beast.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Glenn Murray's Championship goal-scoring record for Crystal Palace stood strong for nearly a decade, which is testament to how impressive a haul it was at any level in any season. It was certainly going to take something pretty special to knock him off his hot shots perch. Cue our next special guest, who we spoke to at the end of March, who had Glenn's stellar stats in his sights and had every intention of stealing his place in the history books. At the top of the Skybet Championship scorers list and fast closing in on Glenn Murray's divisional record of 30 for Crystal Palace in the 2012-13 season is Brentford's Ivan Toney with 28. The last three courtesy of his now famous, well, I'll tell you what, Ivan, I'm calling it penalty pass technique. What do you describe it as? I'm mesmerised every time I see you step up to take it. How do you describe your technique?
Well, first and foremost, you have to be confident doing it. I think a lot of people and my family, I think I give them heart attacks when I step up to it. But yeah, you just got to be patient, really. As you said, it's just a pass. You got to wait for the keeper to make the move and then pass it into one of the corners.
And is the laid-back walk-up and seemingly not looking nervous, is that all part of the theatre and the act of lulling the keeper into a false sense of security and sending them the wrong way?
You could look at it like that, but it's just like if you got to walk up to the penalty knowing you're going to score and be confident, and you got, like I said, you got to wait for the keeper to make the move and then slot it and be patient and confident enough to wait for the keeper and pass it into the corner. So it's a difficult technique, but it's a good one as well if you want to be scoring goals.
Yeah. But so I want to be absolutely clear about this. As you start the run up and make, there is a little feint in there, is there? There is a little feint from you to try and send the keeper a certain way.
It's a little stroll, just a little stroll. Just nice and slow, stare at the keeper, let him make the move. When he makes the move, pass it in the other corner.
I thought against Forest, watching it back a few times, knowing I was going to touch you, I thought there was the slightest hint from you with a little body lean. But you literally are so sharp of mind that you wait for the keeper to make the move and then you decide you have to hit in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I never look at the ball. I don't look at the ball once. So,
wow. Yeah. Wow. Have you ever at any point, I think you've done 8 so far this season, all converted, you ever felt the slightest bit of nerves, not that confidence? And if the answer to this is no, what do you do to get yourself in that confident place?
To be fair, it wasn't that I wasn't confident. I think the first penalty against Millwall was a bit like, right, this is my chance to get going, get my goal and like get on the run. It wasn't not confident, it was a bit like nervous of it. A bit like, I need to get this. But then obviously once that gone in, the rest is just like, right, this is it now. I know my technique. I just got to concentrate on doing it well. And it's been paying off so far.
Hasn't it just as cool a customer as you'll find in the EFL and whose goal scoring exploits have catapulted Brentford into the top flight for the first time since 1947. One man who wasn't surprised by Ivan Toney's record-breaking tally this season was Peterborough United's manager Darren Ferguson, who had the pleasure of working with Ivan for 2 years at London Road before accepting he'd be moving on to a bigger stage and would need replacing. Fortunately, Peterborough are masters of keeping the talent conveyor belt going and had already earmarked Tony's successor in the form of Johnson Clark Harris, who would go on to win this season's League One Golden Boot, the club's Player of the Year and the Players' Player of the Year awards, plus the Sky Bet League One Player of the Season award.
We knew Clark Harris was coming in. It was just a case of getting the deal done. We knew as soon as Ivan had gone, we would get Clark Harris, we felt. We obviously had previous January where Ivan, there was some bids in, but to be fair to Ivan, his attitude was outstanding. He only came to see me once about it over the whole of the January period. I think he understood that he wanted to help us get promoted and then get his move. No surprise, he's done so well. Great lad, quality player. So we knew, but Clark had to get someone in with the physicality. And also, Jono scored goals quite regularly in the Bristol Rovers team in the last two seasons. His record's good. I know the boy. I released him, actually, when he was 17. He was a kid at Peterborough. But he's a totally different person now. He's got, you know, he's matured. He's a fantastic lad, Clem. Fantastic lad. A proper bloke. And he's done great. I mean, he's done absolutely fantastic. You know, with nine games to go, I think he's got 25 league goals or 25 goals. If you get the ball in the box to him, but the ball in the box, he's scoring goals.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Peterborough United really do have such a great record of buying and selling so well. Good management is obviously the secret, and it's in the blood for Darren Ferguson. And someone else who comes from a decent lineage is Nigel Clough, who after 6 months out of the game has found himself a new challenge that he's very happy with. Having looked at a number of different options after stepping down as manager of Burton Albion at this time last year. When you're looking around, there's a decreasing amount of clubs where circumstances are absolutely perfect, i.e. somewhere where you can go where you're going to be given a couple of years to lay the foundations or somewhere, you know, that there's something at a lot of clubs now that's probably not 95%.
I don't think the perfect club exists in that way, honestly. I think you have to go in and work with whatever.
Why couldn't I summarise it as beautifully as you did just then? Why did I need to go around the hills and dells like that?
Well, we had 6 months to think about it. When you're out of work, that's one thing you do. You do a lot of thinking when you're unemployed. Yeah. And you do a lot when you're walking the dog. You have a lot of time to contemplate and take stock and all those sorts of things. And especially in the midst of the situation we're in, when you couldn't do a lot else, couldn't go on holiday, couldn't go away. So you do spend a lot of time thinking about the past and the future, and it gives you, I think, a different perspective on things. So, but there is no perfect club now. You just go in and work with what's there and get on with it as best you can. But I do think that the owners that there are at Mansfield and David going in as CEO, I think the club has got potential. Somebody asked me, I think it was a journalist asked me not long after taking a job, he said, why? And I turned it round to him and said, why not? And he said, I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
I said, why not? Why not take the job? It's a good club. It's got potential. It's got good owners. Why not take it?
Yeah. That period, because there'll probably be a few people listening to this who are perhaps going through a bit of employment turmoil themselves as a result of circumstances. Do you go through a range of emotions when you're out, from that initial, oh blimey, what am I going to do, to, I don't know, a bit of uncertainty and unsurety about yourself? What was the sort of sequence of events that kind of has taken you back to the point of re-entry?
Not to the degree of when you get the sack. I think when you get the sack, I think then the few months, or if you're out of work for a few months, we were fortunate the first time at Derby, we got back in after 2 or 3 weeks at Sheffield United. But after that, then you go through, it's almost a grieving process in terms of the range of emotions, of anger, frustration, feeling of being worthless, certainly, all those things come into play. When you've experienced it once, you know what to expect. It's not a nice thing, but at least it's like a long-term injury. People who get injured for the first time don't know what to expect, how hard it is to come back from it. If it's your second, you know what's coming. And it is easier to deal with.
Yeah. Well, and you also know that sort of fallow periods are temporary as well, that you know you've got the mechanisms to get over it and come out the other side, I guess, having done it once.
Yes, you hope so. And that's no different than when you're a manager and you lose a few games. And the danger is that managers these days, the first bad spell they have, they get the sack. So they never then build up this skill set or learn how to get through those times. And then you become a better manager for it. You know, when Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, if they'd have been sacked, after such sort of short spells, they would never have become the managers that they have.
Patience is a virtue and one that unfortunately isn't afforded to too many in management in the modern era, as Nigel Clough explains. Let's hope he's given the time and the support to fulfil all of his lofty ambitions for Mansfield Town. At the beginning of March, we welcomed the then Doncaster Rovers and now Sheffield Wednesday manager Darren Moore. That was at a point in the season that coincided with yet more racial abuse aimed at black footballers on social media. Once again, we have to have a conversation we didn't think we'd still need to be having in the year 2021. Sadly, though, we do, to try and bring about and maintain change amongst a minority of supporters whose racist abuse on any platform continues to blight the game in this country. You're one of the few black managers working at a top level in the game. And I'm apologising because I hate the fact we have to discuss these issues virtually every time you and I have a chat. But we have had this proliferation of racial abuse of senior black players on social media. It's been a big talking point throughout the last week. Are you bewildered, Darren, that after all the effort football has made recently, some people out there not only hold these views, but simply don't get it in being so willing to express them?
Yeah, I mean, the mere fact that we are still talking about it shows that, you know, there's been tremendous work being done, but there's still a lot more work still needs to be done, because still, unfortunately, there's people out there that just plain and simply, like you said, Mark, just don't get it. They just don't get it. They just don't see sort of the woods through the trees, so to speak, or whatever, however you want to put it. But so we have to keep beating the drum. We have to keep educating them. We have to keep repeating ourselves. We have to keep, you know, the players still have to keep taking the knee for those purposes. You know, they, everybody's moaning. You know, you have one or two fractions people saying, why are they still taking the knee for the very reasons what's happened last week with those multitude of Premier League players getting abuse on these social network feeds, just openly put out there for the world to see. And as you know, we all don't condone it. So whatever, we don't condone it. We have to ask the question with the social feeds, how easily these things are put out there, and they have such a huge negative connotation and bring trauma to the players and the families and the loved ones. And you know, yet people can freely and openly put these messages out there because they just don't understand the simple dynamics of what we're standing for, and we'll continue to stand and continue to stay united on this front until we see more apparent change. And in the whole market, it's not just about the players; it's about the communities that we all live in. And so there's a lot of work to be done, but we'll continue the campaign and stand strong in it.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Darren Moore explaining why keeping the conversation going is as important now as it ever was. February saw us joined by Oxford United's chirpy manager, Carl Robinson. I always enjoy a good chat with Carl about just about anything, and I thought it was important to bring to his attention something I'd recently discovered online that he seemingly was totally unaware of. Listen, I mean, it's a loaded question because somebody has got the website address of Carl Robinson. It's either Carl Robinson, same spelling as you.com or .co.uk, and they are purveyors of handmade medieval Tudor and Stuart leatherwork.
And that's me, but I'll be honest with you, mate, I'm finding management a bit boring at the moment, so I've tried to sort of branch out and look at other unique ways of earning some money if I get bored of management.
Well, you've certainly found a unique way there, mate. I can't imagine the little workshop going on all around you as people fashion leather into medieval torture devices and Lord knows what. Have you got a pen and paper there, mate? Can I give you an order? I'd like a sheath for my sword, a shield, please. And do you do quivers for arrows as well?
Do you know what, though, mate? I'd love to see you in all this.
I'll tell you what. If you win promotion this season, I will have a picture taken with a nice leather shield with my sword in hand and its sheath hanging down my side and a little sort of quiver of arrows hanging over my back. Is that a deal, mate?
Do you know what, mate? That could be the final piece of the jigsaw that we need to try and get a motivation to get promoted.
You see, I tried to provide incentive and motivation for Carl and the players, and while I'm disappointed they didn't achieve their target of promotion, it did at least spare me the indignity of dressing up like a fool and creating the sort of images that would have been difficult to unsee. Moving on now to a heartwarming story that demonstrates the community spirit and camaraderie that exists within football. Earlier this year, sadly, lifelong Rochdale fan and benefactor David Clough passed away, and one of the club's fellow supporters was so touched by Cluffy's generous contribution and support over the years that he set up a Just Giving page to honour his legacy. A timeless tribute thanks to the generosity of the fans and a local sculptor. The man behind this brilliant tribute is Mark Cryer. It was your idea to set up a Just Giving page and to raise the necessary funds to honour his legacy. Do you want to tell us how you're going to do that?
Yeah, well, I've got a good friend of mine, Brain, who goes to watch Valencia quite a lot, and I read an article on them there where they honoured one of their superfans by immortalising him in bronze and actually placing him in the stadium so he could be there to watch every single game. And I just thought, wouldn't it be incredible if he could do something like that for David?
Wow, what an idea. I don't think I've heard about that before. So just to be absolutely clear, this would be a life-size statue, what, sitting in the space where a seat would be, or yes, standing in the corner, or where would it go?
No. It's going to actually be on David's seat, the seat he had in the main stand for the last, 25 years. And we're actually then going to retire his seat. So David will be sat in his own seat watching Rochdale for the rest, well, however long it is.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, this is so radical, isn't it? I mean, I would suggest that football fans wouldn't do this for absolutely anybody, because if they did, they'd soon find their sources of future income were being exhausted a little bit. What's the response been like amongst supporter groups?
Oh, the response has just been absolutely incredible. The football family as a whole have really took it on, and thanks to social media and stuff, we've been able to reach out to fans of other clubs. And we've had donations from clubs up and down the country, clubs like Charlton, Portsmouth, even our local rivals, Bury. A lot of their fans have donated as well.
And what kind of money do you need to raise, and how far down the line towards your target are you?
Well, first of all, I hadn't any ideas really. So I just set it at £2,500. And then I got in touch with somebody that said they could cast one in fibreglass for £10,000. So we rechanged the figure to £10,000, which we've now reached and slightly passed. But in the meantime, we've been contacted by a local sculptor who's got a close family member who's a Rochdale season ticket holder. And he said he's prepared to cast the thing in bronze. So Cluffy's actually going to be immortalised in a bronze statue.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Such a lovely idea, and thanks to so many people clubbing together and contributing to the fund started by Mark Cryer, the life-size bronze has been cast and will be occupying David Clough's now decommissioned seat when the new season kicks off in August. Back to February now, when it was LGBT plus History Month, with the aim of promoting equality, diversity and inclusion throughout all aspects of football in this country. We had the pleasure of speaking to the EFL's first and only openly gay referee, Ryan Atkin. One question, why? Why do you think, what are the drivers that make you the only openly gay man in elite professional football in England at the moment? What is holding a player from coming forward at this stage? What are the key things?
I think ultimately, within football, we thought we had a good grasp on racism. But actually, it's been lying dormant. Hmm. And it's been there. And with the advances in social media, and probably with COVID and the fact that people are watching football through streaming channels, social media channels, the temptation to type behind a keyboard or a screen and for their emotion to come through, which you know, can be very derogatory, discriminatory, offensive, abusive, comes through. But ultimately, we thought that, you know, we had a good grasp and a handle on racism. And what we see is actually we haven't, and we didn't. And it's starting to bubble, and it's starting to bubble over now. And there's a lot of work being done in the game when it comes to racism. And with racism, it's visible. You know, a majority of the time, you can identify somebody potentially based on the colour of their skin. However, with LGBTQ plus, it's not like they're running around with a rainbow or, you know, a light bulb flashing above their head. It could be anybody. And as I said earlier, without visibility, you don't have people who are growing up saying, well, I'm a good footballer, but I may happen to be gay, bi, transgender. I can do that because I see somebody like that operating at the elite level, etc. And I think ultimately, if you don't create the right environment, you don't create somewhere where somebody's going to take that leap of faith. And it is that leap of faith, because ultimately I do believe that for the first footballer to come out, not only will they receive so much support, but they will receive support from the media. I do believe they will receive support from potential sponsors. You know, and what will be great is someone else actually being able to, especially within the playing region, be able to take on that mantle. You know, I'm a football referee. I'm there to attend a football game, arbitrate between two teams, give hopefully a fair decision, because somebody's got to make the decision between, you know, between two teams. Nobody wants to make it, but, you know, that's our role. And to disappear quietly after the game. You know, I'm not there to be on billboards. I'm not there to be banging the drum. But when it comes to LGBTQ plus in football, then I have to be, you know, and I try to separate that between my refereeing role and my role within sport to try and drive the change that's needed. And if we're not going to create the environment and we're not going to tackle homophobia and racism head on with clear policies, clear objectives and a clear stance, how are we ever going to solve the issue? And if we haven't solved the issue with racism in 2021, how far are we behind with things like homophobia and LGBTQ plus players coming forward? So ultimately, more has to be done. And it's not about a rainbow flag, even though that's great visibility. It's about key individuals within the game supporting everyone and ensuring that actually what they say is what they believe, that actually football is welcoming of everyone. And as long as you've got the talent to officiate or to play in the top football, then that's all it should be based on. There should be no stigmas.
Ryan, if there was somebody out there that's going through the same sort of dilemmas that you were in early 2017 before you came out, thinking about it, thinking about what the consequences would be, thinking about the changes it could bring to their life, what would your advice be to them?
My advice would be to look inside yourself and decide where you want to be and where you want to move forward. Have a good support network around you, because friends and family and even those that you work with will be your greatest allies and your greatest support. And I'm very fortunate. My story was very positive, and it is very positive. Others haven't been so lucky, especially during lockdown. You know, we've seen examples where, you know, for some young people who are having to move back home where their parents don't accept their sexuality, it's a very, very difficult position to be in. And that's why it's so important that, you know, we have that support network around us. But ultimately, you've got to remember everything will be okay in the end. And living a life in the shadows is not living a life. And you've got to decide for your own health, for your own mental health, when is enough. And I would hate to think that there are players who are not able to share the spoils of their success in football with their partner because the fear of coming out or the fear of sharing their, you know, their existence and their joy in their sport. And we don't have that problem in the Women's Super League. I'm very fortunate to referee in the Women's Super League, and it's such a fantastic league. And we have openly out, you know, LGBTQ plus players. And so we've got to look at that and look to see if we can replicate it Because ultimately, the greatest joy and the greatest life experiences I have had has been since coming out and to be my authentic self. And there will be negative impacts. Yes, you'll have negative comments on social media, but those people are insignificant when you think about your close friends, your family, your profession. And that would be my greatest advice to somebody that's thinking or contemplating coming out.
I have huge admiration for somebody who is clearly so comfortable in their own skin. Thanks for sharing your story. I feel like I'm not treating you as I normally would a referee, because we managed to get through the whole thing without giving you pelters for some of your dodgy decisions.
I get enough of that already, so...
Okay, I'll let you off then. Ryan Atkin, one of the standout interviews we've been fortunate enough to have as part of the official EFL podcast this season. And from referees getting pelters to managers getting stick from the crowd, Owen Coyle has been there and got the T-shirt, and he explains the topsy-turvy life of a football manager with his customary charm and unique philosophy on life.
We all know about football. I mean, you know, 1 minute you're the best thing since sliced bread, the next minute you're an absolute dumpling. The truth is, we're probably all somewhere in between. We have a great knowledge of the game. We know how to put winning teams in the field. Sometimes it takes certain things to come your way, and sometimes you need finance to go and buy good players. Sometimes you're firefighting different reasons. But what it's shown is that we know the game inside out. I mean, I've had tremendous success in football, you know, north, south of the border, abroad and in India, enjoyed every moment of it. And if the right opportunity comes about with the right people, then of course I'd be happy to get on board. But I've got to say, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing just now at Jamshedpur, a brilliant club, a young club, so it gives me a chance to come in and put things in place that long after I'm gone, there'll be longevity and a good plan in place that will help that club for many years to come.
Yeah, but where do you get your Tunnock's tea cakes when you're out there? Or do you take a big suitcase of them out there? Right? And your shortbread?
I get them delivered over, Clem, believe it or not, with my wine gums and everything else that I need. And obviously being teetotal as well, it can be, of course, it can be testing with the, I'm very fussy with the food as well. But we love the challenge. And the great thing is, with football, to be on the grass, working with players every day. Again, I've said this to you before and you know this. Being a footballer, that's the best days of your life. It doesn't get any better than that. When you get as old as I do and the legs are a little bit slower, then of course, coaching and helping players is a natural progression. And it's what we love to do. And again, listen, the best game in the world.
You're not listening to Cultural Times. You are listening to the official EFL podcast.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
I was about to say that I can't believe Owen gets Tunnock's tea cakes delivered to him in India, but actually knowing him as I do, I can actually. Monday the 5th of April was a significant day this year, as it was Easter Monday, and it was also a day when football history was made. The game between Harrogate Town and Port Vale saw the match officiated by the EFL's first appointed female referee, Rebecca Welsh. And in the build-up, we caught up with Rebecca to find out how it all came about. Has it been on the horizon for quite a while? I mean, maybe not a direct appointment, but has it been talked about, look, we're thinking of doing this, you know, you're top of the sort of FA rankings in the women's game, etc. Did you know it was going to come sooner rather than later?
Do you know what? Hand on heart, honestly, no. So I knew, obviously I've been performing quite well, otherwise I wouldn't have had this opportunity. So we get graded on every game, so you've got to be at near the top of the merit list to be given these opportunities. So yeah, literally it was a phone call on Saturday, and when the phone call came in, I thought straight away, I was on my way back from a game, oh my God, what have I done? That was the initial thought. But yeah, when Mike said, we want to give you a development game, then I just couldn't believe it. So no, apart from Saturday, I didn't have any clue that it was going to happen. So yeah, it was a good phone call to receive.
Here's the bit I'm confused about. I always get asked not to compare the men's and women's professional game. Is referee different? Is it essentially the same, regardless of who's playing, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent it is. Like, I prepare exactly the same for the men's game as I do for the women's game. You know, I do my homework on the players, set pieces, how they set up. But yeah, pretty much, I think you go out there and referee two teams, and if you think it's a foul, you give it. And if you don't, that's basically, you know, it sounds really basic, but that's what refereeing is about. Obviously, you've got different characters in the male game to the women's game. And I think you probably adapt slightly depending on who them characters are. And, you know, what their personalities are. But I guess that's just how people do in life, really. So refereeing's no different. But the prep up to it and in the game, it's exactly the same.
And do you think, or have you had, do you think you will have any additional sort of help in making that switch in terms of the scrutiny, in terms of whether players try and take advantage of you and use the situation? Mind you, they'd be darn stupid if they didn't watch their P's and Q's and realise the kind of microscope you're going to be under. I'm not trying to frighten you here, by the way, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I think it's a good point. And I think, you know, I'm lucky enough that I've refed at Harrogate before when they were in the National League North. So a few seasons ago now, but yeah, I've refed there before. So, and listen, when I go to any game, whether it's a, you know, an under-15s game, whether it's a ladies game or whether it's a male game, I just ref it exactly the same way as I would any other game. You know, I don't give any game any heightened of respect. I give them all the same respect. And I think, you know, as referees, that's what we should do.
Great work, Rebecca Welsh. And keeping the proud Northeasterners theme, a moment not quite as groundbreaking as Rebecca's, but one that will certainly live long in the memory of Hull City midfielder George Honeyman, who had a much needed change of fortune as the season came to a close. All a bit of a relief, George.
Thankfully as well, because I think if I had one more summer going into it after a relegation or a playoff final defeat, it could have been the end of me, to be honest. So, but yeah, it's been a great season by everyone involved. And yeah, it's just amazing to finally, as you say, go into a summer on a happy note.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing this to ring you out at all, but just for the benefit of people that don't know, I promise you, because then we can enjoy your jubilation. Yeah, 2016-17, relegated from the Premier League with Sunderland. 2017-18, relegated from the Championship. 18-19, lost the League One playoff final. And then obviously you switched to Hull that summer and got relegated from the Championship last season. So here's what I want to know.
It's not a great CV, that, is it?
Well, it is now, because it's all come together at the end.
Upward curve. Keep telling myself on
brilliant.
Upward curve.
So the final whistle goes at Sinsel Bank. Your emotions, please, Mr. Honeyman. What flushes over you at that moment?
I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a little bit of relief in terms of just getting the job done, because obviously we had the chance against Sunderland to go up if we won as well, or it gave ourselves a chance anyway. And sorry, I'm just hearing music down my neck.
Yeah, I bet you are. I realised I'd asked you a lot of serious questions, so I thought I'd play a certain George Honeyman celebrating promotion. I mean, who was that playing the guitar? It was brilliant.
It's Sean McLaughlin, one of our centre-halves. He is one talented boy, honestly. He's one. And then we had Big Tommy, he was playing later on, and Ryan, the analyst before that. I've never seen such a plethora of musical talent at one football club.
Well, and led by the beautiful rock star locks of the influential midfielder. Listen, you've not only got great musical prowess at the club, you've got some fantastic footballers. The pleasure you have given the supporters this season has been absolutely phenomenal. It's been great to talk to you, and I'm delighted for you personally. Listen, everything comes to he who waits, doesn't it? Do you want to sing us out, or shall we just say goodbye?
Saying goodbye today would be perfect for me. Thank you very much. As you can tell, my voice is a bit hoarse.
Otherwise you would. George, it's been an absolute pleasure. Congratulations from us.
Cheers, fellas. Thank you.
Shall we have another blast of George Honeyman? I think we should. God knows! Woo! God knows I
want to break free! The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
And we wish George Honeyman all the best with both his sporting and musical career. And to wrap up this week's special edition of the official EFL podcast, we bring you another man of many talents. With Norwich City crowned Championship champions and heading straight back to the Premier League, we caught up with Homes Under the Hammer TV presenter and former professional footballer Dion Dublin. He started and ended his illustrious career at Carrow Road and was therefore the obvious choice to talk about the club's high-flying achievements, especially given that their record of promotion and relegation in the last 6 years reads 2 up, 2 down. See what we did there? So Norwich City have secured the fifth promotion to the Premier League of their history. Until back-to-back defeats, once they'd got over the line, they had lost just 11 of their last 87 Sky Bet Championship matches. Let's take the stairs up to the bedrooms to reflect on another magnificent campaign at Carrow Road with Dion Dublin, who started and finished his playing career at Norwich and clearly likes the fact I've gone to that level of detail in his introduction. Listen, first things first, let's get the wobbly stuff out of the way. Is it perfectly natural that when a mission has been accomplished by a football club, that subconsciously their guard drops a bit and they do take a couple of defeats? Is the pressure so intense, Dion, that the second you're over the line, you do relax a bit?
Yeah, you know what? I think nobody does it on purpose. I just think it's a mental thing. I think the sharpness of the movement and the sharpness of the brain kind of takes a step back, maybe goes to 80%, 85%. The teams that you're playing against know that you are the best in the league and they want to prove themselves as well. So it's a collaboration of a few things. But yeah, I just believe that you take a step back and sometimes you get jabbed on the chin and you have to take one for the team. So yeah, that's what's happened. But over the course of the season, they've been right at it.
Yeah. Well, they've been absolutely magnificent, haven't they? I mean, particularly when you bear in mind they lost 27 Premier League clubs. And I was just looking at the figures. I mean, 12 of the players that got promoted two seasons ago have got promoted again this time around. So bearing in mind the kick up the backside they took last season in the Premier League, it's some feat to regroup and hit the same levels, if not better again, isn't it, Dean?
Yeah, it is. It's you know what? I've got to look. I look at the players, of course. They'll be first on the list. But you've got to look at Delia and Michael, the owners. You've got to look at Stuart Webber.
Webber, yeah.
You've got to look at Stuart Webber and the gaffer as well. It sums up that they have stuck together. Yes, they've got rid of a couple of players, a couple of good players as well. But they have kept the core, or should I say they've kept four or five of the backbone who are Premier League quality. And I do believe that if they were to buy players of that quality, maybe five or six of them, they'd be okay next year when they come up. But they do have to be a little bit more streetwise when it comes to the way that they play the game and when they play that way. Because they got caught out so many times in their own final third, trying to play out, not good enough to do it, got caught out, 1-0 down before they even start. So I'm pretty sure with the experience they had last time in the Premier League that they will get it right and hopefully stay up this time. But yeah, I think I've got to tip my hat to Dealey and Michael Wynne-Jones, to be honest.
Do you know what as well? Maybe to the manager, Daniel Farker, as well, in so as he kind of took the hit in the Premier League, which was they weren't going to overstretch themselves. They were going to clean up some historic debts with the money they got out of the Premier League. And they've done one of these strategic double promotions, haven't they? When you're a yo-yo club, you do get on the Premier League round of funding with parachute payments, etc. So now is the really big, important one, isn't it, Dion?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think you're right to point out Daniel Farker as well, because at no stage when Norwich were going through that horrendous period of losing games back-to-back in the Premier League, did he ever change his kind of interview tone. He was always on a level, win, lose or draw, he spoke incredibly well. And I believe that that's what's helped the players as well. The gaffer hasn't gone hot and cold. He's actually stayed very calm, dealt with the situation. He's told the owners that I need to keep certain players if you want to go back up. He's had his say, and I think he's had his say, and what his say has done, he's got them back into the Premier League with good application from the players as well. And I think you've got to tip your hat to Daniel Farker. I would imagine there were other people that would have taken him as well as a manager, but he wanted to stick to a club that's looked after him, to be fair.
And you know what, Dion? Norwich are a pretty good example of why there has been such an outcry about the European Super League. I mean, the highs, the lows, the emotions those supporters have gone through over the past 24 months are the quintessential essence of football, are they not?
Yeah, they are. They are. They're good fans. They're very, very honest fans. Lovely place to live as well. I've got nothing but plaudits for Norwich City and their owners. Dealey was always nice to me, which was good.
Always had a couple of sneaky beers with Dealey after a couple of games. Don't tell anyone. Always had a couple of beers. That was in her restaurant, by the way. So she was paying. She was always paying.
Very is, nice. Dion, you weren't with her on the famous night, were you? Plying her with alcohol when she when she Let's Be Avenue the crowd.
I wasn't there that night. To be fair, if I was drinking with her that night, she wouldn't have been able to walk onto the pitch. Never mind walk onto the pitch and say that. She deserves it. She deserves it.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's funny how catchphrases stick, isn't it? You've set that up beautifully with her catchphrase and yours, of course. Do I need to let you go and have a look at those bedrooms?
Okay, I'll go up the stairs to the bedrooms just for you, Clem.
Loving your work. Great to talk to you, Dion.
Cheers, Clem.
That's it for this week and indeed the 2020-21 season. A huge thanks to all the guests who've joined us over the last 9 months during some truly challenging times. We're already looking forward to spending some quality time with the biggest names in the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, when we return in August in what we all hope will be a slightly less hectic season with a more traditional fixture schedule. If you've enjoyed this week's or indeed any of the episodes, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and please share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement, wishing you the most restful summer you can manage in the current circumstances, and we'll see you at the start of next season for a brand new episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.